So this is Andrew Cox and Greg Soule. We are doing something a little bit different. It's been ages since I've actually done a real legitimate blog update. So I thought, why not make kind of a video version, because this is like the poor slash lazy man's way of doing it, as opposed to me like cutting out pictures. So the new newsletter issue came out, and I thought this would actually be kind of a cool chance to catch up and just do a quick and dirty video. And by quick and dirty, I mean Andrew Cox. So there we are.
I mean, Australians aren't dirty. We're just quick.
Gotcha. Fair enough. I'll give you that. All right, man. So I'm looking at the newsletter here, and it's a three pager, and there's some new hardware and stuff like that. I mean, these new MANT sectors they have there, MANT. These are new, right?
Yeah. These are. They were announced a little while ago, but these ones are like the first time they've actually appeared in the newsletters and whatnot. It's really interesting to see them continuing down this path of like building, I guess, more ubiquity style devices where you can put in an actual a microchip, like router board inside the device, or buy your whole solution from Microtik. Whereas before it's like, oh, cool, you put together like a 433 or something and pick up cards off someone else and pick up antennas off someone else. And whereas come to this place where it's all in one.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm looking at these things and they're saying that they're perfect companion for the Basebox, Nextbox, Netbox, and the Netmetal. So I'm assuming this means, because if you scroll down just a little bit right down here at the bottom, they've got kind of a sort of a hidden port, so I'm assuming those things just snap on as opposed to having kind of a complete enclosure back there that you could put the board in. And I guess that's clever. You know, that way, if you upgrade, even a bigger board will still fit, right?
Yeah, it looks like they've got two. Like, they've got the ones that are just the actual antenna, but then further down there's the new ones that are coming soon, the MANT or the MANT box, which will have an integrated router board. With, it looks like, Ethernet and an SFP port, so.
Ah, yeah, there. SFP port. That's interesting. So finally, because I know Mike's been bitching about SFP ports on sectors forever. I would love to give him credit for this. I doubt it's all him, because most people just ignore him once he complains for so long. But so let's see, they have the MANT 15 and 19. What are the difference between these guys? 5 gigahertz? Oh, 15 dBi, and I'm assuming 19?
Yeah, 19 dBi gain on the second.
120 degree sectors. Mm-hmm. So that gives you 360 with three of these guys, right? So you get full. $49, that's pretty inexpensive.
Oh, yeah, for a 120 degree sector, that's really good. Yeah. And they look like a lot of the other stuff that Microtik put out in this sort of space, they look really, really schmick versus something like the cap access point, which looks like from the 70s.
I know, right? Yeah, it's like straight out of Mad Men or something. But yeah, these look brilliant. The mounts look pretty solid on them. They have Bronzolate trademark shielding. Never heard of Bronzolate. I'm guessing, is that something they coined, or maybe it's another product?
I'm assuming, Anna, that looks like it's a third party thing.
Okay, it must be just kind of some kind of bronze infused paint maybe that they're spraying inside there.
It's like, I have to do a bit more research on that one. I can't find much about it, but maybe it is.
Yeah, and I mean, they're touting this absorbing shielding coating inside of all of these, so I guess they're finally jumping on the bandwagon. It makes sense. That way,
it's better than having that sort of scatter that everyone else has to deal with.
So. Yeah, cut down on the side lobes and kind of I mean, if you're doing 360 degree, that means you've got two antennas right behind this guy, so you want to cut down as much of that as possible. And it says that coming soon, they're going to have built right in, so an integrated 15 and 19 version as well. Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that looks like the other one. So Mike will be happy with that. I noticed as well, just while we're on the antenna stuff, they're touting the MAN30, so the big dish that they released a little while ago. Just talking about how you can switch it to a 45 degree feed rather than having like your standard horizontal and vertical polarization. You can adjust the horn on that to sit at 45 degrees instead.
Oh, I gotcha. So your mount's going to say solid in place, but the horn's actually going to tilt.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Do you know anybody doing 45 degree shots?
I don't. Most times, yeah, you'll see all the ones I've seen either, yeah, horizontal or vertical or both. But it's interesting to think about, yeah, what how much interference you get from that. I'm not actually sure. So, how much interference with existing installations that are sitting horizontal, vertical?
Yeah, and it's interesting that they say number three down there, it says unify the channel output if link deployed over a body of water. And I never thought about that, because the vertical and horizon or horizontal are gonna have very, very different experiences. But I guess if you go 45, it's equally
Got
affected on both of them.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah, actually makes sense. I just don't
It's
do
nice to
any
see them
shots of over.
impact things. It's
Yeah.
nice to see them impact things as well, like not just rolling things out and going, have fun with that. It's telling people like this is what you can do, this is what's available for them.
Yeah, these are the common scenarios you would use these. I like that a lot because I mean if you think about like the old manuals they used to have, it was this is what all the different things in the commands command set is, but never this is the situation you would use this in. So it's nice to see them actually kind of helping the idiots like us out. I say like us, like me, idiots like me. I'm not gonna lump you in here with me.
I don't know, just ask my missus, she'll agree.
All right, so what else do they have in there? They have the CCR 1072 introduction, although we've beat that thing to death. So many people have been talking about that for so long, I guess.
It's been like the worst kept secret that people have been playing around with it and testing it and
Yeah,
maybe.
Andrew Thrift. Although Andrew Thrift, he held on to that NDA. He didn't give us a hint that he was using it, which I'm kind of upset. I thought we were homeboys, I thought we went way back like that. But now he kept it to himself. These guys have they actually hit the market yet?
It has. I think they've got all the pricing and everything for it now. I don't think I've seen them here locally just yet. I know they'd put an item up for them in the store, but not sure if any of them have actually hit the shores here. I'll just check now.
Yeah. So I see the screen on this thing, and it kind of made me think of something. So I have a test router, a 2011, on my desktop, and the CPU usually runs really low. But I decided, what was it, when 633 came out, I'd go ahead and upgrade, because it's just a test router sitting there. And with no traffic moving, I saw my CPU sitting at about 10%. I couldn't figure out why. And so I did a profile. And it said 5% was unknown and 5% SPI. And so you do a quick Google, and SPI is the little LCD on there. So I disabled the LCD, and instantly that 10% utilization goes to nothing. So I sent a support ticket in, and their response was that the LCD is expensive. Like CPU wise, so they said turn it off. And I thought, well, it wasn't running at 10% before, but maybe if you just kind of add that to your list of things to have a look at.
Have you got yours updating? Like, are you showing graphs or something on it, or is it just cycling through the standard sort of output?
It was just at the base menu, not showing any graphs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
Yeah.
it was really like choose an interface menu. It wasn't even showing anything. So in my opinion, with no traffic moving, not even displaying a graph, it really shouldn't be sitting at 10%.
Especially not on something like as low powered as that. They're going to put them in all of them. You'd think that.
Yeah. Something else that was interesting that came back, and they said also, if you want to save on CPU, don't have any extra SFPs plugged in there if you're not using them, because that will use additional resources. I thought that was interesting.
Good one to note. I really do like that they've gone down this dual power supply path to the CCR, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Again, and we were talking about the other day the fact that there's now a couple of devices that have readily accessible backup power, but there's always the option of like plugging things into a power adapter or powering them via PoE, and as was the case, I think it was the 450 and 450G. There was then a separate internal power supply as well, so you can actually have three independent sources of power, or connect like a 12-volt battery or something to it internally, and it would basically sit there as a backup. So, but now they've gone down the path of actually having external power supplies, and then potentially PoE.
Yeah, that's clever.
Yeah. I feel like the 10072 isn't going to run over PoE, though. It'll just be external power.
I have no doubt you're... You know, it's something I was interested in is... I saw somewhere in a list somewhere, someone was talking about how they doubted that Microtik was going to invest in copper 10 gig ports on any of their CCRs. And I was thinking, well, isn't there like a copper SFP Plus that you can just buy? And I Googled and I couldn't find one. I guess that's not a thing. And I can't imagine why. I'm sure there's plenty of people that will see this or can instruct me as to why not, or yes, there are. I don't know. I just... A little bit of Google searching, I didn't find one. So,
I mean, like a 10 gig Ethernet SFP.
Yeah. You know how they have like copper SFPs that you can just shove in, and so
yeah.
In lieu of optics, you just have a copper port. So I was thinking, well, you know, if that was an option, then these guys complaining is a nice way of saying it, they're pissing and moaning about it not having one. You know, you could kind of satiate everybody, but I guess that's not a thing.
I've never seen anyone using a 10 gig copper port, to be honest. I've seen like direct link cables and things like that, which are like they're not an SFP on their own. They're like a point to point sort of link. But everything, in my experience, it's relatively cheap to get 10 gig optics now for the standard like 10 kilometer optics and that. It's quite cheap to get two 10 gig optics and a single mode cable to go between them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen how some newer servers are shipping, you know, with like copper 10 gig ports. Yeah. So I guess that would be a scenario maybe if you were just going to jam that right into your router. But
yeah,
most people I know, I mean, they put everything into a switch first.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see, scrolling down, you got your Hex PoE Lite, which is kind of the RB750 version 2, I guess, more or less.
The RB750 for powering access points, by the looks.
Yeah, it looks like max current 1 amp per port, and I think that's an improvement. I think it used to be lower, I want to say. So that's cool. And it can be PoEN powered, and then I believe you can take PoEN and then pass that through, right, to the ports?
Yeah. You can use both of those, so.
Yeah, it's pretty clever, pretty cool. And I noticed in the last change log, they said that you were able to, that they, ports that weren't PoE, they removed the PoE reboot option from them because it was, I guess, confusing people.
Yeah. When we get around to going over that change log, that is a massive change log since the new upgrades.
Huge departure from the way they used to do it. All right,
really.
What else they have? LNS support.
Yeah, that's in the change log as well. But it's this has been a long time coming. There's been a number of posts about this on the forum in the past. I'm led to believe there's still the LACE support is still in progress, so that may come soon. But basic LNS support. So PPPoE over L2P, L2TP is now working. And I think we might have Mr. Thrift to thank for some of the testing on that as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. He's been talking about it for ages. It's basically, if it's a feature I've never heard of, he's been campaigning for it for years.
And he's been using some form of it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
No. definitely know a few people that have been looking out for something to do that, so.
Yeah, I think part of that he had to begrudgingly use a piece of Cisco equipment, to which he quickly washed his hands. So I'm sure he's looking forward to full support in there.
Then there's the DNS name support, which has been something that for the last 5, 10 years, I think it's been supplemented with router scripting. Like I have a dynamic VPN address or something, I'll write a script for it, but being able to have the DNS name just in resolving each time, it's gonna make a lot of people's lives a little bit easier.
Yeah, there was, who was it? A fellow was commenting back and forth with me about how they added, you could send an email and it would resolve, but apparently it would only resolve the very first time and then it would store that. So subsequent re-emails, it wouldn't do that. And I think he said that they fixed that in 6.33, I believe.
Okay.
Or,
At the same time, they added this DNS name support for all the
yeah.
tunnels.
Yeah, and so something that I was curious about with these tunnels is when they first come up, I'm sure it's going to DNS query and then adjust it. Or is it just you put in the DNS name and it'll query and then change it to an IP? I mean, in my opinion, what I want it to do is if a tunnel drops for whatever reason, when it attempts to reconnect, it requeries that DNS
Yeah, no.
name.
It definitely re-queries. I've been testing the release client over the last little while, and it saves all the values now as a DNS name, and then it then resolves those as it reconnects. So
So every time it drops, if the A record changes for whatever reason, it'll requery that and then reconnect on that new DNS.
I'm not going to say it will definitely re-query each time, but I know it does look up the name, so it may only re-query when the DNS entry actually times out, but it's definitely saving it in there. You can now make a tunnel and actually point it to vpn.mycompany.com, and it will keep it in there as vpn.mycompany.com rather than just instantly resolving it to an IP address.
Gotcha. So this is gonna be, I mean, this is gonna be awesome for road warriors or anybody who's got DHCP on the far side. That way, tunnel drops, pulls a new IP, and it should hopefully reestablish. That is fantastic. I know a lot of
Yeah.
people were saying for like base scripts, they definitely wanted something like that. That way they could put a kind of a default flat config on and ship it out.
Yeah, I've been working on something similar myself, so might come back to that on a future episode.
That's cool. PoE out manager. So this is really cool, this power ping. So basically it pings an IP and if that fails, it'll power cycle the port. I guess you could have done that with a netwatch script before.
But it's nice having it there, and it looks like it does IPv4, IPv6, and it does an ARP
Yeah,
query.
that's really
Similar
cool.
to your check gateway command, but for something PoE, which is really good given they're bringing out devices like that Hex PoE Lite. If something goes offline, well, you've got a way to recover it automatically now.
You don't have to, do a truck roll or worry about it, or if you lose connectivity because the backhaul tanked, it'll reboot it for you. We at some of my sites, I was using the digital loggers power managers. I'm sure you guys probably use them, where it would ping a host, and if it goes down for X number of blah blah blah, it'll just reboot a port X number of times. And I guess this is getting fairly close to that.
Yeah, well, it's got a if ping fails for duration, then a 5 second power cycle is done, and then it looks like it has a power cycle interval as well, so you can specify if you want something to be power cycled every X amount of time, so.
Power
But
it
that's
on
not fair,
for
so.
blank duration. Oh, so if you have something that's been on for 3 weeks, you can have it power cycle.
Yeah.
That's kind of clever.
So you bought a cheap webcam from another country that needs resetting every now and again. Rather than having to script that sort of thing, you've got a router that will do it proactively.
That's clever. And I'm sure they'll be really receptive to feature requests around it. I'm sure they're going to get inundated with them as well. So everybody's going to want them to do a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Yeah, well, presumably it's logging as well. Like it'll have its own log entry. So if you wanted to capture those events via syslog or something and report on them or alert someone on them, then you'll have a way to do that.
That's very cool. Status monitoring shows ping status. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah. So it's good alerting. So let's see. Scrolling on down, single TCP stream performance stats. I guess
this one's really interesting. It's not clear what they've actually done, but basically, like I was reading this the other day, what they're saying is that for single stream TCP, whatever change they've made, they've just doubled the performance. So it's like where you were getting 10 meg per stream previously, you're now going to get 20 meg. And it's like they're saying it's 802.11n. It's something they've done in the way it processes that, but that's crazy.
Yeah.
100% increase in capacity there for single stream TCP. But.
Yeah, UDP is virtually ineffective, but TCP is actually a pretty big optimization. I wonder. So, you know, I mean, they still have all those values in there that look similar to this on all the hardware. I wonder if they're going to start doing these with, like, fast track enabled. You know, do a routed 25, you know, rules, firewall rules or whatever, but with fast track enabled. I wonder what that would look like as well.
Fast track and fast path on a standard device versus, yeah.
Yeah, I think they should add that as an additional line to all these speed tests they do because... I've seen crazy speed increases using fast track. So, you know, if it's going to skew your values up to the positive side, why wouldn't you go ahead and add that to your testing variables?
And just caution people there as well, because it's a relatively new addition.
It is indeed.
I've been caught out a couple of things myself. Just need to remember. How it works is basically it's bypassing the firewall once it thinks it knows what your traffic is. So the one pertinent one that I discovered is that if you are using fast track, I think it is. If you're using fast track and you're running a hotspot and you're trying to keep track of the data. The hotspot sessions no longer count data. So you'll get the first bit of the user's session as they connect up and as the things get tagged, after which point, any time they make a connection, as soon as it goes into the fast bypass section, you no longer see that as radius traffic. So if someone can upload 10 gig and you're not going to see that. So gotcha. Just be aware of that sort of thing. If you those rules up above. I'd probably recommend not using it unless you've tested yourself to know how it's going to affect your account.
So it could negatively impact your accounting system.
Yeah.
And I think early versions of it, JJ was complaining about how it was not showing up on some statistical outputs as well. But I want to say Giannis got back with him and had him do a couple of tweaks and it started working again. So I don't know where he's at. I'll have to hit him up to see what the story is.
Yeah.
All right, so let's scroll down a little bit. Upcoming MUMS, there's going to be one in Dallas. That's my neck of the woods, man. That's going to be an easy one to go to, which is kind of disappointing because I wanted to go someplace cool. And Dallas kind of sucks. But the interesting news is what, Andrew? What would that be?
Well, there's one in Slovenia that you can come to.
I'll feel like a king.
The interesting news is that at this point, I actually believe I may end up getting to both the EU and the US market at this point. So I've left my old job. I'm doing some work part-time for a new company. And as part of the sort of things I'm doing with them, we're rolling out not only hotspot-in-a-box solutions, but also a full, it's basically like a residential management platform that works with Microtik. So we can go to any building manager and say, you've got 100 people staying here. We've got a system where you can pay for internet. You can get us to roll the system out for you, and you can then charge your guests for internet as if they're they're paying for ADSL services or cable services, and it makes it really simple for them, and we just sit there as the solutions integrator. So I think there'd be quite a few people at the mums who might be interested in that sort of thing.
Very much so. Plus, you get to come and hang out with me in Texas, and that's going to be awesome. So.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about that. I was like, then I have to hang around Greg the whole time. I'll just go to the EU one.
I'll give you a little space. You'll be able to breathe. Just for moments. All right, so scrolling down, they talk about RouterOS version 6.33, and there's a tremendous change log. It's amazing, but I'd say for the sake of brevity, let's save that one for another quick chat and skip straight on down to GPON, which is Gigabit Passive Optical Networking. So it's kind of it's like cable modems but with fiber, right? So it's you have multiple customers that use a single strand of fiber, right? So it uses one transmit frequency and one receive frequency, so they're different. It's an oversubscription model, so I mean it can be 8-1, 32-1, and I think like 192-1 or something like that, using kind of optical multiplexing, where it kind of one optic then bursts it out to a whole bunch of different connections. And so they're dipping their toe into the GPON market, which has been getting a lot more attention lately.
There's definitely attention in that space in Australia at the moment with the NBN rollout ongoing, and some areas getting fiber, some areas getting copper upgrades. So
that's cool, and I would love to see a really expensive GPON system come out from MikroTik. I mean, here in the States, I think most people are doing like either an Adtran system or a Calix system, and we really need to get like a real GPON expert to get on here and just kind of give us an idiot's course at some point. But I know there's other systems like Huawei, or rather Huawei, that's how you pronounce it, kind of the Chinese manufacturer. And I mean, there's several players in the game. I just don't know enough about it, right? And I'm just curious where MikroTik's going with this. You know,
it looks like they're pushing more into that SOHO space. I mean, originally, I recall like there was never an interest in providing ADSL support because they didn't seem to want to get into that, helping like, or having people trying to connect ADSL up with a MikroTik device. But this seems to be the opposite of that. Like they're diving straight into that now. If you're putting a GPON module in a MikroTik, it's meant as a home device. So
yeah. I could see that going into like one of the 2011s that have the Ethernet port, as well as the, I mean, it's got SFP and then plenty of Ethernet and then even the wireless built in. That's, we've seen a lot of GPON, or what do you call them? ONTs, the
optical network termination point,
or an ONU.
It says here, like the very first line here, they're talking, it's a device to be used for fiber to the home installation. So maybe we're seeing the growth of MikroTik in that residential space.
Yeah, and I think there was also a post on the forums where, who was it? Somebody from MikroTik, I don't remember who, was asking for people's favorite management systems for like kind of...
Zero-6-9. Yeah, it was Normus was posting the other day.
Normus, there you go.
Who was using it and what the preference was for TR069, which for anyone working with ADSL and cable installations and things at the moment, is a system that allows the internet service provider to actually push out configurations and firmware updates and things like that to a customer-managed device. So the customer still has access to the device, they can still do all their own port forwards, set up their own wireless and things like that. But there's this sort of underlying area of the router which says, well, the person you're connecting to for your internet is allowed to have some say in how you connect up and provision devices that have no configuration and upgrade and manage the firmware versions of devices that do have configuration. So it's very flexible and it's...
Yeah.
A really good idea, I think.
So in my head, I could see a package coming out from MikroTik, probably, what do you think, version 7, where it turns any MikroTik into a true ONU, where you stick the GBIC in, or rather the GPON interface, and then boom. Although it doesn't have to necessarily be this GPON interface, it could be active Ethernet as well. So you could just put an SFP in or come in Ethernet and still manage it just the same. I wonder if they're going to come out with a router board that's got an FXS port, so you could so you could do a VoIP port right off of it. Because I mean that's what you see a lot of fiber to the X.
Integration of voice services to router OS, that would be interesting.
That would be interesting.
It's been so long since they were removed now. But meanwhile, we have SAMR servers, and we have that little USB port on the side that allows you to connect up hard drives and USB sticks and whatever. So maybe voice is something that's on the way.
Well, I mean, it kind of, when you're looking at a GPON ONU, that you're going to put out at somebody's site, that's usually one of the key thing that's in there. It's a little RJ11 port, or maybe a few RJ11 ports, so you can also turn it really inexpensive, because it's low cost, high margin on voice services. Believe it or not, people still use them. Every public building that has a fire panel needs a POTS line to dial out, and every elevator still needs a POTS. At least here in the States, every elevator still needs its own dedicated POTS line to dial out. So, if you're going into a fixed install in a building, you're going to get at least that amount of revenue from it.
There's still the requirements for them. So whether they end up being provided over an IP-based service or traditional doesn't matter at the end, so long as you can provide them.
So I'm going to say, if you're a GPON guru, wizard, super ninja number one, reach out and hit me up, because I want to holler at you. And if you can, I'd love to get you on one of these shows. If you can't, just give us the Cliff Notes. And we probably want to put you on a Skype so all these other idiots can talk to you too. Any closing thoughts, Andrew?
Really excited about these last couple of releases, to be honest. It's really good to see MikroTik taking some input and changing the release schedules and coming out with all this really new cool stuff. So I've been really happy with the last few releases. It makes it so much easier having a bug fix release that is just going to be there to fix any issues that are found, and then having a sort of bleeding edge release that you can run at home and test things on. So
Absolutely. Yeah, there's been a lot more transparency, I guess, if you will, with
yeah.
everything, with the change logs, and then it seems like a lot more responsive to customer inquiries, customer requests, bug fixes, all that good stuff. And the new hardware keeps coming out. It keeps coming out, and they keep surprising us. I didn't expect them to do a GPON thing, and I think it's really cool that they're sort of moving into that space. Because there still is, at least from my experience, a lot of questions, a lot of people asking about, what to use here and there. It's still a really kind of confusing area, so I think there's opportunity for them to jump in and do something.
Yeah, no, it's good.
All right. Well,
Watch the space.
if nothing else, I'll say this is where we call it. And thank you much for your time, Mr. Cox.
No worries, and hopefully I'll be able to join in another one of the group sessions soon.
Yeah. I say we do the change log in a big one, because Mike's gonna punch me in the junk for doing this one privately with you. You were always my favorite, Andrew. All right, see you later, man.
See ya.